Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, you are the judges of the evidence to be laid before you. Be just and fear not, for the true administration of justice is the foundation of good government.
Famous jury trials, dramatizations of cases taken from actual court history. The names of persons and places have been altered to protect the identity of those concerned.
The State versus William Wright.
It was on a raw, foggy April day some years ago that the freighter Golden Pheasant steamed up New York Harbor to her berth in Jersey City. And scarcely had the vessel docked before a police patrol that had been notified and was waiting on the dock boarded the Golden Pheasant, began questioning the members of the crew. There had been a murder aboard the Golden Pheasant. In his cabin lay the body of the ship's captain, James Bruce, bloodstained, horribly mutilated. Within a few hours after the freighter had docked, the police announced that they'd arrested William Wright, the ship's cook, and charged him with the murder of Captain James Bruce.
The State versus William Wright.
And now we take you to the crowded courtroom where William Wright went on trial for his life. All eyes were upon the door through which the defendant entered. William Wright was a cripple, a hunchback. He took his seat and listened impassively to the proceedings as the prosecuting attorney concluded his opening address to the jury and began to examine his first witness.
Stevenson Carpenter, you were a member of the crew aboard the Golden Pheasant.
Aye, sir. I was.
Will you tell the jury what you know of the occurrences aboard the Golden Pheasant on the night of April 10th?
Well, sir, it was near 1 o'clock in the morning when a storm broke and all hands was called on deck. When Captain Bruce didn't come out of his cabin, the second mate sent me to wake him up.
And did you go?
Yes, sir, I went. Though not without misgivings in my mind, for if the captain should take it wrong that I waked him, I'd suffer for it, as I well knew. But I had the order and I obeyed it.
And what did you find?
I knocked on the captain's door. When I didn't get no answer, I opened the door and I spoke to the captain, sir. He didn't answer, so I went over and shook him by the shoulder. He didn't stir, and when I took my hand away, there was blood.
What did you do?
I was trembling like a leaf, sir, but I managed to get the lamp burning. Then I see what's happened. The captain's all over blood, and he's hacked like someone had taken a hatchet to him. As soon as I could move, I got myself together and went and told the first mate.
I see. Now, did the wounds you saw on the captain suggest any particular weapon to your mind other than a hatchet?
Yes, sir. It could have been a meat cleaver.
Do you know if there was a meat cleaver aboard ship?
Aye, sir. There was one in the cook's galley. Many of the time I seen him sharpening it.
Who was sharpening it?
The cook, William Wright.
The defendant?
Yeah. He was always sharpening it. He'd stand there all twisted and grinning while he sharpened the cleaver, and he'd have the queerest look in his eyes, like he was drunk, kind of. And one day when I was in the galley, I says to him, "You must be getting quite an edge on that cleaver by now."
Aye, it's got an edge.
It'd make kind of a mean weapon in a fight, wouldn't it? Cut right through bone.
Aye, it would make a pretty weapon in the hands of a man with the strength and the purpose and the hate to use it.
Be you thinking on using it, Bill?
Thinking? I've been thinking for 20 years. But now I've done with thoughts. Aye, it is past the time for thinking now. This is the time I've been waiting for.
And so the witness admitted he was planning to use that cleaver as a weapon?
That's what I made in his talk. But he was a queer one anyway. Give me the creeps he did, and I didn't ask him no more questions.
Your witness.
Carpenter, how long was it from the time you received the order to wake up Captain Bruce to the time you reported his death?
Well, must have been something like 20 minutes or so. You see, it was a rare stormy night, so you couldn't move about fast.
Mm-hmm. 20 minutes, eh? Time enough for you to slip down to the cook's galley and get that cleaver. Wasn't the cleaver there that you knew was sharpened to a razor edge?
I object to that question.
Overruled.
I didn't go near the galley.
You did not take that cleaver and enter the captain's cabin with it in your hand and strike him as he slept over and over until he was dead?
No, I never had the cleaver. I swear Captain Bruce was dead when I found him.
Carpenter, You stated in your testimony that you had reason to know what would happen to you if you put Captain Bruce in a bad temper. Now, open your mouth, please, and look at the jury. Those three front teeth that are missing, weren't they knocked out of your mouth by Captain Bruce?
Aye, they was.
Carpenter, on the day before Captain Bruce was killed, didn't you publicly state in the presence of witnesses that Captain Bruce would not live to see the end of the voyage? Didn't you?
Well, I said it, yes. But you don't know the way we was all talking by that time. Other man Jack of us didn't wish the captain dead, no one of us.
You mean to say every member of the crew of the Golden Pheasant wanted to kill Captain Bruce?
Aye, sir, they did.
I object. I object to the question and the answer.
Yes, strike them out.
That's all.
Call Sidney Stoner.
Sidney Stoner. Sidney Stoner. Take the stand. Do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Sidney Stoner, you were first mate on the Golden Pheasant.
Aye, sir.
When the murder of Captain Bruce was discovered, did you conduct an investigation?
Yes, sir.
Did you find the weapon with which the murder was committed?
No, sir.
Did you find any object missing that could have been used as a weapon?
Yes, sir. There was a meat cleaver missing from the cook's galley.
Did you question the defendant as to his whereabouts during the evening?
Yes, but he refused to answer any questions.
What had been the defendant's attitude toward the captain during the voyage? Had he made any threats against the captain?
Well, sir, there was a lot of grumbling among the crew because the captain was a hard man, sir. And Bill Wright would sit there all twisted up and grinning and listening to what the crew was saying, but not saying anything himself. One night, one of the men asked him point blank if he didn't hate Bruce. Bill thought it over, and then he said,
"Hate? You don't know what hate is. What do the bruises and welts and broken teeth the captain's given you amount to? You think that's enough to make you hate a man?"
"Sure, I'll make you love him."
"When a man hates, he can nurse his hatred for 20 years. He can give up his family and his career and sink into the gutter so that in the end he can have his revenge."
And so the defendant admitted that revenge was the most important thing in his life?
Yes, he did.
Thank you, Mr. Stoner. Your witness.
Mr. Stoner, you mentioned two objects that were missing from the Golden Pheasant. Wasn't there a third?
I don't remember none.
Wasn't there a page torn from the ship's log?
Yes, sir, that's right.
The missing page contained Captain Bruce's entry for April 10th, the day of the murder.
Yes, sir. And for the 2 days before that. 3 days was missing altogether.
I see. Where was the log kept?
On the bridge, sir. The captain kept it locked up in a chest there, along with the ship's papers.
There was always some officer on the bridge.
Yes, sir.
Then it would have been quite impossible for the defendant to have removed that page from the log.
Yes, sir.
Now, Mr. Stoner, you say you were present when the defendant spoke of hatred and revenge.
Aye, sir. I heard it.
The men were discussing their hatred of Captain Bruce. They were making threats against him.
Aye.
And they dared to do so in front of you, the second in command of the ship. You made no effort to maintain any proper discipline.
Well, sir.
Isn't it a fact you actually encouraged them?
No, that isn't right.
Weren't you actually engaged in inciting the crew to mutiny?
No, sir, it's a lie. There was talk of mutiny, but I clamped down on it hard. I swear that's the truth.
Is it? My information is different, Mr. Stoner. That's all.
Call Henry Bromley.
Henry Bromley. Henry Bromley. Henry Bromley.
Bromley, you were a member of the crew of the Golden Pheasant.
Aye, sir.
Tell the jury what you know of the night of April 10th.
Well, sir, it was getting on to midnight when I was coming off watch. I was hungry, and I thought I'd sit down in the cook's galley to get some coffee before I turned in.
Yes?
Well, I seen there's a lantern burning in the galley, sir. Casting a clear light and making funny shadows on the wall. The first thing I seen is the shadow.
Yes?
Well, I almost lost my nerve and run away, but I take one more step. Then I can see it's Bill Wright who's making the shadow. Bill Wright, and he's sharpening a cleaver and got the strangest look I ever seen in a man's eyes.
What did you do?
Well, I decided to stay and see what he's going to do. He's up to some dark mischief, just certain, and maybe I can prevent it. And in a moment, it blows out the lantern, comes out and down the passage with the cleaver in his hand. So close he could have touched me. I hate to think what might have happened if he'd run into me in the dark.
Go ahead.
Well, I followed him. He went towards the bridge and on past it to the captain's cabin. He knocks, and presently I see the door open, and Bill White goes inside. A storm's coming up, and the wind is howling, so I can't hear nothing. But suddenly I hear the captain's voice over the wind shouting, "No! No! No!" like a man of terror for his life. And then I heard a sound like a choked scream, and I think I can hear Bill Wright laughing. It's a sound I'll never forget.
And did you enter the cabin?
No, sir. I knew what was happening in there too well, and I figured it didn't concern me, and I got below as quick as I could.
It's a lie! I didn't touch him! I never heard him! I swear I didn't kill him! I swear it! Spoke those words, Bromley.
You're having a cleaver in your hand now, Bill Wright. I'm not afraid of you. I saw what I saw.
You're not afraid, eh? Well, you're a brave man, Hank, because in 1 second...
Stop him!
The courtroom spectators rose to their feet in a wild uproar as the defendant, William Wright, tried to attack the witness whose testimony had been so deadly. While the defendant was being subdued, the judge declared a recess to restore order. We will continue with this trial in just a moment. And now we take you back to the courtroom where the witness, Henry Bromley, his testimony unshaken in cross-examination, had left the stand, and the prosecution's last witness, Dr. Thaddeus Brown, was called.
Dr. Brown, will you look at the defendant closely, please? Have you ever seen that man before?
Yes, I would recognize him anywhere, even after all these years.
What do you mean by after all these years?
The last time I saw him before this trial was 20 years ago in a hospital. He was using his real name then, which is William Wright Waterman.
It's a lie! My name never was Waterman.
Order! Order! Go ahead, Dr. Brown.
Now, when Waterman was brought into the hospital, his back was broken, legs and ribs shattered, and his skull fractured.
How had he received these injuries?
Well, Waterman had been a seaman on a sailing vessel. The report was that he had fallen from the rigging to the deck.
That was the report?
Yes, but before he left the hospital, Waterman told me a different story. He said he'd been deliberately pushed from the rigging.
And did he name the man who attacked him?
Yes, it was a seaman named James Bruce. The man, Captain James Bruce, for whose murder William Wright Waterman is now on trial.
Take the witness.
Dr. Brown, these occurrences you speak of happened 20 years ago?
Yes.
And you expect this jury to believe that you can identify this man, the defendant here, as Waterman after all these years?
I could tell you the number and location of all the fractures he had in his body as a result of that fall. I didn't spend a year putting him back together again without getting to know his appearance. Of course I recognize him.
I have no more questions.
In that case, Your Honor, the prosecution rests.
The defense will open to the jury.
Call Richard Barley.
Richard Barley. Richard Barley. Richard Barley, take the stand. You solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
I do. Richard Barley, you are quartermaster aboard the Golden Pheasant.
Aye, sir.
Were you at the helm between the hours of 12 and 1 o'clock on the night of April 10th?
Aye, sir.
That's correct. And where was the first meet?
He was on the bridge, sir.
You could see him clearly?
Yes, sir.
And he was on the bridge all the time between the hours of 12 and 1 o'clock?
No, sir. It was going on the half hour when I happened to notice that Mr. Stoner isn't nowhere to be seen.
Isn't it usual for an officer to leave the bridge like that or not?
No, sir. Not without he speaks to the man at the wheel, sir.
And did you ask the first mate why he had left the bridge?
Aye, sir. That I did. And he denied he'd ever been off the bridge at all. But I know what I saw and what I didn't see, sir.
Thank you. Cross-examine.
Mr. Barley, wasn't the night of April 10th exceptionally foggy?
Aye, sir. It was a bad night.
And isn't it possible that Mr. Stoner was at one end of the bridge where he was hidden from you by the fog?
think I would have seen the bulk of him, sir, even in the fog. That's my recollection of it, sir.
But can you swear that you would have seen him no matter where he was on the bridge?
Well, I guess so, sir.
You guess so. That's all.
I call the defendant William Wright to the stand. William Wright. William Wright. William Wright. Your true name is William Wright Waterman?
Yes, that's my name.
And it was James Booth who pushed you from a rigging some 20-odd years ago, causing your present bodily affliction.
Yes. He was in love with a girl. When she accepted me instead of him, he swore to have his revenge. His chance came when we were both in the rigging, 50 feet above the deck. There was a heavy wind blowing, and it was all you could do to keep your footing up aloft. He deliberately pushed me. I never expected it, and I couldn't get my balance. I didn't wake up until 2 days later in hospital.
And how long were you in hospital?
A little over a year. They patched me up. When I got out, I looked like this.
And did you look up the girl who had accepted you when you left the hospital?
No. I knew I was going to suffer enough without that. I spared myself her pity and her loathing, at any rate. Besides, I had a job to do.
What job?
To find Jim Bruce and kill him.
And did you find him?
Yes. But not for 20 years. Perhaps if I'd known how long my search was going to be, I might have given up. But as it was, I could live each day in the hope that the next might end the search.
Yeah?
For 20 years, I followed him over the seven seas, sometimes missing him by a matter of hours, sometimes losing all track of him for months at a time. Finally, I found him in New Orleans. He was the captain of the Golden Pheasant bound for New York. And as luck would have it, he needed a cook, and he signed me on.
He didn't recognize you?
No. He'd never seen me since my fall.
And you planned to kill Captain Bruce with a meat cleaver once the ship was on the high seas?
Aye. But to that end, I'd spent long hours sharpening the cleaver so it wouldn't fail me in the hour of my triumph. I bided my time waiting for my opportunity, and finally events played right into my hand. The captain's brutality drove the crew to the point of mutiny. And I told Captain Bruce what was in the wind.
Yes?
He said he was pretty sure he knew who was behind the mutiny. But he asked me to find out all I could, and I said that I would come to his cabin at midnight and make a full report.
And did you?
Yes. Little before midnight, I left my bunk and went to my galley where I gave the cleaver a final sharpening. Then I wrapped the cleaver in one of my aprons and went up to Captain Bruce's cabin and knocked on the door. And he let me in.
And then?
He asked for my report. He asked how many of the crew were missing.
How many of the lovers are going to join this mutiny?
All of them, sir.
All? You mean you're the only one that's not against me?
I'm against you too, Captain.
What?
Stand back, or I'll split your skull with this cleaver. Stand back,
then. But why are you mixing in this? What have I ever done to you?
You can look at me and ask that question. Look at me, James Bruce.
Look at me. Bill Waterman.
You.
No, it can't be. Bill Waterman.
Yes. And what you see before you is what you've done to me. I've been waiting 20 years to show you what you did.
You're not going to use that cleaver. Let out of the arm. Bill, I was crazy jealous of it. Just a kid. I didn't realize I was out of my head. Get away from me. Don't hit me. No.
And what did you do, Mr. Waterman?
I just stared at him. I couldn't believe that cringing, abject, cowardly hunk of a man was the man I'd looked for 20 years. And as he begged for his life, all I felt was loathing. Loathing of him and of myself, because for 20 years I'd made this object the most important thing in my life. Now I saw him, cowardly, contemptible.
not even worthy of revenge. I dropped the apron and the cleaver from my hand, and I turned and left him there.
And he was alive when you left him?
Yes, cowering on the floor. He hadn't yet realized that I wouldn't kill him. However, he died. But I had no hand in it.
Take the witness.
Mr. Wright, or Waterman, you admit that after 20 years searching for this man, you went to his cabin that night with the intention of killing him?
Yes.
And you took with you a weapon you had especially prepared for that purpose?
Yes.
And although Captain Bruce was found within the hour, murdered by that weapon, you wish the jury to understand that you left that cabin without killing Bruce?
I didn't kill him.
That's all.
The defense rests, Your Honor.
State rests.
The defense will sum up to the jury. Your Honor, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, this case is overshadowed by the character of the defendant, by his tragedy and his 20 years' quest of a man who ruined his life. And these things are apt to make us forget. One piece of evidence that the prosecution has neglected to explain or fit into the case: the page torn from the logbook of the Golden Pheasant. We have proved that the defendant had no opportunity to touch the log. Someone else did that. Someone who knew what was on that page. Knew that it would mean disgrace and prison if the log were to reach port with that page in it. Someone who murdered Captain Bruce so that he could safely mutilate the log. I say to you that the missing page from the ship's log is the key to this mystery. In it lies the real motive for this crime. And what was on that page? Perhaps we will never know. Perhaps it was a record of the proposed mutiny with the names of the known mutineers. Mutiny is a capital crime, ladies and gentlemen. Murder would not be too great a risk to make sure that page be destroyed forever. In the face of the evidence, do you dare to run the risk of adding one iota to what this man has already borne by returning an unjust verdict? You dare not. For William Wright Waterman is innocent.
The prosecution will sum up. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, if ever there was an open and shut case of premeditated murder, this is it. Don't let your minds be befuddled by the desperate devices of the defense attorney, his grumbling crew, and his page missing from the logbook. Crews always grumble. If their captain be a hard and possibly brutal one, their grumbling is louder. But how many cases of mutiny or murder of a ship's captain can you remember? And don't delude yourselves that this crime was justified. Two wrongs cannot make a right. This was an act of premeditated, brutal, cowardly murder. There can be but one verdict: guilty as charged.
In a moment, we will bring you the actual verdict of the jury in this case. The state versus William Wright. And now we take you back to the courtroom where, after deliberating 7 hours, the jury was ready to deliver its verdict.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, have you reached a verdict?
We have, Your Honor.
How do you find?
We find the defendant, William Wright Waterman, not guilty.
And so ended the famous trial with the triumphant acquittal of the tragic, sardonic defendant, William Wright Waterman. But the crime did not go unsolved. A few weeks later, detectives had pieced together a chain of circumstantial evidence against the first mate, Sidney Stoner. So strong that when Stoner was confronted with the evidence, he broke down and confessed that he had killed Captain Bruce. He'd come upon the ship's log at a moment when Captain Bruce had left the bridge. And there he saw a complete record of the proposed mutiny and his own name listed as one of the ringleaders. Sidney Stoner was convicted and hanged for his crime. And so ended the strange story of revenge, terror, and murder on the high seas. Famous Jury Trials, the drama of the courts drawn from actual courtroom cases. This is a Grace Gibson radio production, directed by Lawrence H. Cecil.